A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 167. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of Ghostwatch. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, Ghostwatch, 1992 BBC Halloween presentation. Very appropriate for this time of the year when we're recording. A 90-minute show, and it was set up as an apparent real-life investigation into ghosts and into one particular haunted house in North London.
Yes, and that was done with some presenters in studio, very well-known presenters in studio, and some experts also there in the studio, and a phone-in panel where they had people accepting phone calls there as well. And this was all combined with an outside broadcast, a team that was on site at the location of this haunted house. So it really did have the feel of a live broadcast event investigating this haunted house, looking for real evidence of ghosts.
But of course, as we discussed in our last episode, this wasn't a real live broadcast. It was, in fact, all a pre-recorded drama, which gave the appearance of being a live broadcast and may have been or probably was intended to be a hoax, although, as we've said, and we'll talk about more, there's some dispute about that, I think, on behalf of the creators.
Yeah, the intentions, of course, are quite unclear, but it does work, it seems, quite effectively as this sort of hoax.
Okay, so we should get into a little bit of the nature of the haunting of this very ordinary house in North London, where there are literally bumps and bangs and things that go crash in the night. There are strange noises. And in fact, these noises have previously been attributed to banging in the water pipes. That's what the family seemed to hear.
Yes, and the children started referring to the ghost as pipes. And I think that was the younger daughter, particularly starting with that. And it became this sort of mysterious character with the children referring to pipes. And you had the appearance of scratch marks on the older daughter Suzanne's face. And, you know, there were these questions. Could Suzanne have been producing the noises and the scratches and things herself? Could it be something else? Is it a real haunting?
Yes, and there is a very interesting moment when it appears that some, or maybe all, the manifestations might be produced by the older daughter herself. But of course, we've also got the people in the studio answering the phones, and in fact, callers to the studio suggest or give us some more information about the ghost and suggest there may be a link to a quite horrible figure from the past, a man called Raymond Tunstall, who was known to be a child molester. And who had committed suicide in that house back in the 1950s. And we first get that sort of suggestion coming in on the phones from apparently people ringing into the show. And then as we go on, we get even more background information and find out that the man himself, Mr. Tunstall, who's become this ghost Pipes, may have himself been haunted by an earlier spirit, a figure from the 19th century called Mother Seddons, who was a baby farmer who took in small children to look after them in quite large numbers. And in some cases, children died under her care. So there's these two sinister figures that that the phone calls tell us about, which give us some clues to the background of this house.
Yeah, it sort of gradually builds up into this almost a haunting within a haunting, with these two different ghosts being involved. And as the program goes on, we do start to see things and catch glimpses of something that may be the ghost. And you have the suggestion in there that the audience of the TV show may be some sort of mass seance. So you get some very strange and complicated and interesting things going on in here.
Yeah, we have this expert in the studio with Michael Parkinson, a parapsychologist who has investigated the events at the house. And she suggests this idea that, in fact, by the television and people watching and people phoning in, that there may be a huge electronic seance going on, and it all gets quite spooky. And events, as we've said, at 41 Fox Hill Drive are getting slowly going out of control, I think, Brian.
Yes, that's absolutely right.
And Mr. Pipes, the ghost himself, is quite, he's quite a remarkable figure. It's a very clever invention by the writer Stephen Vogt, who gives us this very creepy and sinister haunting, who we first see in a drawing done by the younger daughter in the house, when she shows the drawing to Sarah Green, who's leading the outside broadcast unit, and tells her that's what the ghost looks like. And he's an unpleasant figure. He's wearing a dress which appears to be related to this earlier ghost, Mother Seddons. And we know that his face had been disfigured by cats after his death, because he kept a lot of cats in the house. And after he committed suicide, the cats are supposed to have basically eaten part of his face. So we get the idea that his face doesn't look very nice.
Yes, that's right. And you get this sort of dark and grisly kind of image of this ghost, Pipes. And that ghost was played by the actor Michael Ferrari. And they used a series of camera tricks to give us glimpses. So you're not seeing him in full detail. You're just sort of seeing these little glimpses, one of the most interesting being when a handheld camera pans past Pipes and you see this ghost on camera as the camera pans past, then jumps back to look at that spot and the ghost is gone. So you had sort of good moments there.
That was very cleverly done, that particular moment. But as you say, we do see other glimpses of him, and you have to keep your eyes open, especially when there's reflective glass or mirrors. You sometimes might catch a glimpse, I think, Brian.
Yes, that's right. And they went to a sort of very deliberately dark ending in this show, and quite sort of spooky and unnerving.
That's right. This electronic seance, which the show has apparently unwittingly created, seems to end with the ghost's influence extending to the television studio, and this very famous British television presenter and interviewer Michael Parkinson apparently being possessed by the spirit of Mr. Pipes as the show ends. And meanwhile, as we've said, back at 41 Fox Hill Drive, things had become very, very dangerous and nasty. And in fact, viewers were convinced that they had seen possibly the death of Sarah Green, the nation's sweetheart. So it really does end with a bump and a bang, and quite spooked out, I think.
Yes, it's very intense in the way that that this goes and this ends, for sure.
Well, what do you know about it?
Well, we've been into all that. We've got the deeds and searches going back to the year it was built, and the history of the site as far as the Doomsday Book and the ley lines.
Mm. Do you know Mr. and Mrs. Sellers?
Yes, they're on our list of tenants. They lived there in the 60s, I think.
Did you know they sublet a room?
No, I didn't know that.
Being illegal, it wouldn't be on the official records. The lodger was their nephew, Raymond Tunstall.
How do you know him? Why are you calling, sir?
I worked as a social worker when he came out of psychiatric hospital. He had several convictions for molestation, aggravated abuse, abduction of minors. He should never have been let anywhere near any community. He was a very disturbed man, in my opinion.
So we have to talk about the reactions to this show, because it was controversial and, like the show itself, quite intense. As we had mentioned, a couple of days before the broadcast, the BBC backed off on the idea of it being a hoax, and they insisted on putting this written-by credit at the beginning of the show, and so on. You had the previews that had aired with clips in the preceding day or two, and the Screen One sort of drama logo in front of it. But it was pretty easy to have missed those trailers that were running, and to have not noticed Screen One or noticed what it meant, and, you know, to have just not noticed the written-by credit. And in fact, there were quite a few people who were watching a movie on ITV that ended just a few minutes after Ghostwatch started, so switched to the BBC and missed all of the cues that were there in order to say that it was a drama. And ironically, I think the movie on ITV was actually War of the Worlds.
Bizarre. Strange that, you know, people turning over from a movie on the other channel, so they may have missed those opening moments from the BBC. And we know something very similar happened with Orson Welles' War of the World famous broadcast, where there was another more successful, perhaps, show just finishing on another channel. So people would have missed the introduction. And of course, as we've said, they used various tricks in the show. So they did, for instance, put up the real BBC phone number on screen several times throughout the show, and they were encouraging people to phone in. Now, all the messages that the broadcaster Mike Smith was apparently dealing with as part of the show, they were all obviously pre-scripted. And when they played clips of viewers phoning in, of course, they were all actors. But in fact, that didn't stop the BBC receiving about 20,000 real calls to that number during the evening. People who were successful in getting through were told that it was all a drama and it was not real. But of course, there were so many callers that many people couldn't get through. And I guess if they were in a state of panic or anxiety, this just made things seem worse, I would have thought.
Yeah, it turned into to quite a mess for them at the time, for sure. And the next day, not surprising, the tabloid papers started the backlash, and they were critical of the BBC, calling it a sick hoax. It was a little bit reminiscent of the backlash to Alternative 3 from 1977, which was something we talked about on British Invaders some time ago. The BBC went on the defensive, and the producers found themselves summoned to in-house meetings. And, you know, they were forced to face some criticism, some serious criticism about this.
And, of course, the criticism, I'm afraid, unfortunately, got even worse because, sadly, a young man committed suicide 5 days after the broadcast, and his parents blamed it on the BBC and the Ghostwatch programme, which had apparently disturbed him considerably. And there was an investigation by the Broadcast Standards Commission, who stated in their report that the BBC had a duty to do more than just to simply hint at the deception it was practicing on the audience. So the Broadcasting Standards Commission, I think, coming out quite critical of the BBC in the way they'd handled this.
And of course, we were going there from references to it being a hoax, and now it's being called out-and-out deception. So there were definitely some big things happening there, and lots of discussion about this, and it became quite a big deal about what had happened. The BBC issued an official apology, and in fact, later on, the British Medical Journal published reports in 1994 of post-traumatic stress disorder specifically in children who had seen this.
Yes, I mean, that is interesting, isn't it? The BMJ itself picking up on this television program. They rarely comment on TV, but and of course, interesting, because children shouldn't really have been watching this program, Brian.
Yeah, it was definitely a post-watershed broadcast. It was at 9:25 p.m., and it was an hour and a half, so most of the scarier parts of it, I would think, were well after 10 or 10:30 in the evening, and it was fairly well understood at this point that it was generally not children's television at that point.
That's right, but I think possibly viewers, again, may have missed Michael Parkinson's warning at the start that the what was to follow was not for younger or sensitive viewers. And of course, the presence, the reassuring presence, I would guess, of Sarah Green, Mike Smith and Craig Charles may have convinced families that it was safe for family viewing and for younger viewers.
Yes, well, it did very well at impersonating this sort of live broadcast.
And as you say, but unfortunately, there is some evidence that it did damage some of its viewers, and there it is in the medical journals, no less. I think possibly the first British Invaders show to ever be mentioned in a scientific paper that we're aware of.
That's probably true, yes.
Who knows? There may have been others. Anyway, the result of all this outcry and backlash, investigations and official reports was that the BBC have never, ever repeated this show. Perhaps not surprisingly now. We know it was sold abroad. And we have mentioned from time to time a Channel 4 programme called The 100 Scariest Moments, which I'm pleased to say is available to watch on YouTube, and several British Invaders shows have cropped up in it. And here is Ghostwatch, appropriate enough for the address of 41 Fox Hill, that it is number 41 in Channel 4's 100 Scariest Moments of All Time.
Yes, interesting that it's in there, for sure. Not surprising that it was in that list.
Okay. And we do know that, you know, people who saw it, an awful lot of reactions. And if you go to our Facebook page, you will see comments, particularly from Carl, Gareth and Tony, all of whom recounting tales of people being quite seriously freaked out by this show. You know, if you watched it at the time, I think you vividly remembered it. It was very, very unnerving.
Yes, I think probably even people who were quite aware or became aware as they watched it that it was not real, that it was a hoax. Even then, it freaked people out a little bit, because it did go to some pretty intense things there later in the show. So we should talk about some of the influences and things that have come after this. There was actually a sequel, a written story, written by Stephen Volk, the original writer. He wrote a sequel called 31/10, and that is available on his website. So if you want to read a sequel to Ghostwatch, it's available there. There have also been a variety of references to it in pop culture. In Doctor Who, the new Doctor Who, of course, there was the episode Army of Ghosts, featured a program that was very much in the Ghostwatch style.
We also know that the makers of the film The Blair Witch Project are reported to have seen Ghostwatch before making their film. And you can see, I think, some similarities in what is purported to be a real bit of film with its slowly emerging ghost story. And a character we've mentioned before, Derren Brown, the British TV illusionist, who cropped up as an actor in Mark Gatiss's The Crooked House Christmas Ghost Stories. He obviously does several shows with his various illusions, and he did a show called Seance, which again used many of the ideas that we've seen in Ghostwatch, with, I think, similarly chilling effect, as you'd expect from Derren Brown, because he's very good at what he does.
Yes, of course. Most Haunted is a real-life ghost hunter program that really does look for ghosts. And they use a lot of the same gadgets and the same kind of technology that was in Ghost Watch. And like Ghost Watch, they have a former Blue Peter host involved as a presenter.
Another spooky parallel.
Yes, for sure. There is also something called Behind the Curtains, which is a documentary about Ghost Watch, and it's available on DVD.
What's that noise? Right, where's it coming from?
Look at... It's just like an earthquake.
So, I guess now we have to start talking about what we thought about this show, having had the chance to watch it now, Brian. Our good and the bad and our spooky and not so spooky. What do you think went well? What would you like to start with?
Well, it's interesting. It's a strange one in how it fits into things. I would have to say that the impersonation of a live event and an event of this type, what it would be like if it were live, was very good. It did that impersonation, if you like, very well.
Yes, I mean, it does have the trappings of a live television broadcast. It looks like one of those familiar watch programs, Hospital Watch or Nature Watch. And of course, having those big British television names fronting this show really helped sell it. And I think actually, considering they're not known as actors, Michael Parkinson and Sarah Green and Mike Smith did a very good job of sort of basically playing themselves and selling this show to us.
Yes, they did. The other thing that I thought was quite convincing and added a lot to this was the phone-in aspect, the callers, because it looked like a call-in show. They had the real BBC phone number on there, and there were real people phoning, but they had pretty convincing phone calls coming in that were, you know, that were actors. They were all pre-written and everything, but they did a very good job of having these phone calls support the case that there was this actual haunting happening and filled in the bits of backstory. It was done in a rather persuasive and convincing way.
Yes, again, they're very clever because they do have some sort of general phone calls, which are just about ghostly experiences. But as you say, Brian, we do then start to get more of these calls that are filling in the background about this house and telling us something about this terrible Mr. Pipes. Cleverly done. Lots of the, you know, the television broadcast aspects, very cleverly done, I think.
Yes, you get lots of the things with people calling in and saying, you know, I grew up on that street in the 1950s and I remember this about that house. And they're, you know, they do those kinds of things in a way that work pretty well.
Okay. I guess, you know, we've mentioned how good Michael Parkinson and the others were. I suppose I do have to say that some of the other actors, at the time, they weren't very well known, but I think now they're much more familiar faces for various bits and pieces they've done. So the woman who plays the parapsychologist in the studio and the American scientific expert that they interview sort of down the line, he's more familiar now. So they do sort of give the game away slightly now when you watch it.
Yes, of course, at the time, they deliberately took actors who were not well known, so people would not recognize them as actors when they were watching. When they do start pulling in the spooky aspects of seeing and hearing strange things and seeing glimpses of the ghosts and so on, it is very well done and quite unnerving and spooky. There's some well put together visual and audio things in there.
Yeah, I mean, the effects might not be big enough for some people. They are subtle, but I thought, like you, Brian, they were quite well done. You have to watch closely, and you will catch glimpses of things. And they also, again, they do clever tricks. In one scene, we think we see something appearing in the children's bedroom, and a phoner, in fact, several people call into the show apparently to report this. So they then play that piece of video back in the studio, only this time there's nothing to be seen, and Michael Parkinson dismisses it and dismisses our beliefs in a way. But that was cleverly done, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
So what about things that didn't work so well for you, Brian? What didn't you like about this show?
Well, there were a number of things that I was not so big on. One was that they set up the sort of debate between the believers, the paranormal type people, and the scientist, and set it up as very much, you know, one has to be right and one has to be wrong, and you are supposed to sympathize with the paranormal believers and you are supposed to not sympathize with the scientific, you know, the scientists and the people who are using scientific explanations and not necessarily believing in ghosts. And I thought that was a little bit clunky, a little bit cumbersome, that it was so much pushed upon you, you know, who you were supposed to sympathize with.
Okay. That's interesting. Yes. I mean, the American skeptic, it's, I suppose, in a way, quite little screen time compared with the woman in the studio who's the parapsychologist, who's clearly a believer. Okay. I suppose as a broadcast from a supposedly haunted house, we would expect there's a fair bit of nothing very much happening. And it does sort of take a while to get going. I suspect it's about 40 or 45 minutes before we catch our first glimpse of the ghost. So before then, we get quite a bit of Craig Charles clowning around, trying to keep it going. So I suppose the early parts might be a bit dull in comparison to what happens later on when things really kick off at the house.
Yeah, I think the interesting things and the spooky things in this are mostly in the last half hour. And a lot of that first hour or so, I found to be a little bit dull and tedious. And, you know, honestly, this type of live broadcast that they're mimicking, that type of show isn't something that I'm particularly interested in myself. And because of that, it was, as I said, a little bit dull, and I found it hard to attach to these characters and really be interested in these characters and what happens to them. The two daughters were definitely well played, and they had some good moments. But, you know, rather than a conventional dramatic story, this type of live broadcast interaction you have for so much of the early part of it really didn't grab me until you get to those more intense things later on.
Okay. We've mentioned Alternative 3, another very good hoax program that we covered on British Invaders. Now, that has a much more sort of scientific basis, I guess, Brian. Would you pick Alternative 3 over Ghost Watch?
Yes, I absolutely would, actually. I thought Alternative 3 was a much more interesting show. It was only about half as long, or not too much more than half as long, which I think helped in some ways, and it had much more interesting sort of complications that it was slowly introducing as it went along. And I think doing it as a science documentary, as they were, certainly that interests me more. But I think it had more to work with the science and the politics and the space things that it was bringing in. Now, they're two very different things, and they do have the similar elements of bringing in sort of a well-known presenter playing himself and that sort of thing.
Okay, interesting comparison for us here.
We mentioned earlier The Stone Tape, which was Nigel Neal's drama that was about science investigating a haunting. And I think that did a much better job of doing the science on the one hand and supernatural on the other, and having it so neither one of them would be right or wrong. They were two perspectives, and how would each one deal with what was happening? I think that was much more interesting than what Ghostwatch did with one is going to be right, one is going to be wrong.
Okay, all right. Another interesting show that we can sort of compare and contrast with.
Yeah, absolutely. So we should get into our recommendations now. So, Eamon, why don't you start off on this?
Okay. Do you have Marmite in Canada, Brian? Do you know about Marmite?
I do know about it. It has to be imported or bought from special import stores in North America.
Okay.
The concept, I believe, is Marmite is a food product and it's something that you either love or hate, and no one's in the middle, right?
I think that's right. Exactly that. Ghostwatch is a Marmite show that people either love or they just find it all rather dull, I think, is my experience. I have to say, I didn't watch it when it came out, and I wish I had, because watching it since, I really enjoyed it. I think it's terrific. I think the way they handle the appearances of the ghost is fantastic. I think the way it gets very dark and nasty in the last half hour is really very well done. And I just enjoy it terrifically. And I love all the stories about it, frightening people in a nice way, obviously, because as we said, there are some tragic stories associated with it. So I think it's a great show, and I think it's a shame that it's had such a bad reputation over the years and that we can't watch it again at Halloween. Brian, on the other hand...
Okay, it's a bit of a tricky one for me. I have to say that it is very well made. The quality of the production is very good. It does the live broadcast kind of look very faithfully. And I do like a lot of the spooky things that come in that, especially in that last half hour or so. It's also a very interesting show in its historical position and how controversial it was, and in the stories of all of the people who were genuinely frightened by this. I do have to say that I did find a lot of it kind of dull, and it's interesting to see, but I would not choose it as a favorite hoax show. I do prefer Alternative 3 as my sort of choice interesting hoax program. I would also, for the spooky things and the scientific investigation of ghosts, I sort of lean towards The Stone Tape and also Children of the Stones, which of course we've mentioned many times on British Invaders now, both shows that we've covered at different times. Ghostwatch is an interesting show. It's interesting to see it, but I didn't really enjoy it that much. It was interesting. I did enjoy some of the moments towards the end, but as a whole show, I didn't enjoy it all that much. And I can't really give this a strong recommendation. If this is your type of thing and you do like those live broadcast ghost investigation sorts of things, absolutely, check it out. But my recommendation would be there are other, I think, more interesting spooky shows and hoax shows that were done earlier.
Okay, so perhaps not quite the Marmite result here on British Invaders, but as ever, do weigh in with your own views about Ghostwatch. Come and join us on the Facebook group or send us some email and let us know what you thought about it.
Very good. So, in summary, Ghostwatch was a hoax drama that may or may not have been intended to really be a hoax and really fool people as opposed to being a drama. It did a very good imitation of being a live broadcast with some real well-known presenters and hosts using their own names and their own personas, playing themselves, and did this sort of live presentation investigation of this British haunted house and investigated what was happening in this haunted house to try to discover if they really had ghosts there. And they had callers phoning in, of course, actors playing callers, who described things that happened in relation to that house and ghosts and unfortunate and even criminal things that had happened there. And went into all of these different things. And of course, we do see as part of this broadcast these spooky things happening and very strange things. And we do see ghosts in this. So we end up with this very intense kind of ending that it turns into. And we had this very controversial program because great numbers of people believed that they were watching this live broadcast and that it was all real and that they were seeing some very scary and difficult and intense things.
Okay, some spooky fun here on British Invaders for Halloween.
An interesting part of television history, for sure.
Absolutely. So do come and join us next time, where we are going firmly back towards science fiction, but we are drifting away from television slightly as we do one of our yearly diversions into a television spin-off, and we are looking at Blake 7, The Audio Adventures.
Yes, that should be fun. There have been a few different companies doing Blake 7 on audio over the span of quite a number of years, which is quite neat to look at. So that'll be a good one to talk about next time. I believe this year we actually have two sort of non-TV spin-off of a TV show programs because our schedule was juggled around a bit and we didn't have one last year. But that will be a fun one to talk about next time for sure. So you can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so you can find us at thegeekculturenetwork.com. We have a Facebook group, so you can search for British Invaders on Facebook and find us there as well. Lots of great discussion going on there.
You'll also find lots of great content and many other great podcasts with a geeky theme over on the Voice of Geeks Network at vognetwork.com, where we are proud members. Going out, our shows go out on a Monday and Tuesday night, and as ever, we welcome all our VOG listeners.
Yes, and you can find links to download podcasts and subscribe to podcasts, as well as the stream to listen to things as they broadcast them there. Lots of neat podcasts. And they have a live chat that you can log into to chat about the shows that are being broadcast. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for listening. And until next time, this is Eamon in the England British Invaders studio. Round and round the garden like a teddy bear. What's this?